So when do, I know this is a question, no developer likes to answer, but when do we see this actually getting implemented then in terms of timeline?
This one I've actually provided a very aggressive time frame for. I would hope for the implementation to be ready within about 6 months.
That's insane. And then
That's not, guaranteeing the academic review, formalization, audits, and all of that. But I hope implementation to be done within 6 months, and I'd hope for notable progress to have been made on all of the academic review with that. I do have to distinguish implementation from integration, though. Right now, I'm discussing implementation. Integration is technically something distinctly discussed, and I would hope that that is also done in that time frame, but I cannot speak with as much confidence on that time frame.
so potentially at Monerotopia in November, we can be doing a presentation on the completion of implementation.
On the proposed implementation of the proofs itself, yeah, possibly.
Monero Talk is sponsored by CakeWallet, a trustless open source wallet that gives you the keys to your crypto. Invoice, donate, and trade your Monero with peace of mind, piece of cake. And by StealthyX, an instant exchange where privacy is a top concern. Go to StealthyX.io to instantly exchange between Monero and 450 plus assets without having to create an account or register and with no limits, making StealthyX a simple way to purchase Monero with crypto anonymously. Monero Talk is also made possible from contributions by viewers and listeners like you. And supporting us is easier than ever by typing in MoneroTalk.crypto in your Monero.com or Cake Wallet send address field to send us a tip.
This week on Monero Talk. In this episode, Douglas Tooman interviews Luke Parker as part of a Monerotopia segment. Normally, we don't publish the Monerotopia special guest segments as a Monero Talk, but this one is not to be missed. Luke offers some mind-bending insights into the development, implementation, and implications of full-chain membership proofs. Luke describes what he sees as being the path towards implementing them into Monero prior to the Seraphis upgrade. They cover the potential timeline for implementation, with Luke aiming to have it ready within 6 months, and the possibility of presenting the completed work at the next Monerotopia conference. Monero Talk starts now.
All right, Luke, what's going on, man?
Nothing much. How are y'all?
Good, good, good. Well, what are you doing with regards to the total solar eclipse? Are you anywhere near totality?
Yeah. I'm not sure if I'm currently in the path of it, but I'm either in the path of it or I'm like in a couple hours off of it. So I'm heading out with a few friends to go see it in person.
Nice. Awesome, man. Enjoy that. Enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
So wanted to bring you on. So happy you made the time. A lot's happened this week with regards to potential path forward for full membership proofs. You're the guy leading the charge. We got you on. Tell us all about it, and then I'll continue to pick your brain, I'm sure.
Yeah, sure. So full chain membership proofs, it's something I've prior talked about. I actually announced my work on them almost a year ago at the prior Monero Con. And the plan was to do them with Seraphis. Seraphis, of course, being this upgrade to Monero's transaction protocol that just is massively sane. And there's no real other way to put it. It's massively sane. It's just a sane transaction protocol. And it cleans up a lot of our tech debt. It moves from us kind of assembling proofs together into a very more formal and academic distinction. It enables a lot of new features. One partnered with Jamtis, the proposed new address scheme. We're talking, the ability to see when an output is spent if you share that view key. So that just gets you a bit finer control. We're talking about delegated view tag finding. So anyone you can trust. You don't want to trust them to have your Monero view key. You don't want them to see, every time you make a transaction, but you do trust them to handle, 99% of the computational load and kind of filter down what transactions might be yours without ever truly knowing. That was going to be another thing introduced. We were no longer putting wallet data into TX Extra, which was going to be great. There's a lot of reasons I can love Serifs. And one of the things, it being this more academic formulation brought, is the separation of proofs. Right now, we have the CLSAG proof, which we use as our signature, specifically our reg signature. And that handles a few different things. That handles membership. My output, which I'm spending, is one of these outputs, but I won't tell you which. It handles, you know, ownership or spend authority or spend authorization, however you want to phrase it. Yes, I am the owner of this output, and I am not stealing Doug's coins. And then it handles linkability. This is a key image. And this key image is unique. It's unique to this output. And because this key image has never appeared on the blockchain before, I have never spent this output before. And that's how you know I'm not spending this output twice. So one of the main advantages of Serifs is it broke this one proof into two. It broke it into membership as one proof, and then distinctly as another proof was the signature. This is my output. And with the signature, it proved the correctness of the quote-unquote linking tag. As I said prior, the key image is how we satisfy, quote, linkability. The linking tag is basically, from a user's perspective, it's the same thing. The linking tag is just the more academic notion of a key image. So that is something that is much appreciated because my prior work on Fulltune membership proofs was just for that. It was solely for membership. And if I try to put a membership proof into Monero right now, that doesn't work. If I just put a membership proof into Monero, cool, what are you replacing? Oh, the CLSAG. Oh, no, that also handles, you know, this ownership and linkability properties. You can't replace that with just a membership proof. You need to do all of these other steps. And because of that, it just really made sense to do FCMPs with Serifs, also because of how notable the evolution with Serifs would be. You know, Serifs was already targeting more privacy. It was already this long looked for to hard fork. It was already changing wallet software. I was trying to move to a curve cycle with it, and that would offer much greater efficiency, so on and so on. So when Serifs explicitly provides this framework, and when Serifs is already doing all of these other great things, and it's already a time of such transition, it just really made sense to do things with Serifs. But then, of course, you know, recent spam attacks, and the question was, and I was talking with someone, it was this random off comment in like Monero or Monero community or Monero dev, and it was like, so when are can we discuss like FCMPs in the next hard fork, or when are FCMPs happening? I forget the exact question, Ethan. And I was like, no, we're not discussing those until we're discussing the Serifs launch. Like, ideally, yes, in my opinion, we would launch Serifs with FCMPs, but we're not discussing this until then. And then I'm like, wait, why aren't we discussing this until then? You know, if the demand for them has gone up, what would be such a formulation? And I kind of just popped into MRL on like, do we want to discuss this? Do we want to be discussing, you know, FCMPs before Serifs? And the obvious question is like, how would you do that? You just said that, you know, you can't just have FCMPs replace CLSAG. They do two different things. One does membership and ownership and likability. How can you just propose this replacement? So I was kind of thinking about it, and I designed two different exact methods which would work. But what I ended up doing is I ended up proposing this one specific mechanism where instead of the membership proof outputting what in Serifs would be an enote, a squashed enote. Right now in Monero, we have a couple different variables floating around. We have the output key, which is who's allowed to spend an output. And then with that output is the amount commitment. The commitment is, you know, the cryptographic representation of the amount that hides it so that no one else can see what the amount is. But it also lets us do, you know, zero knowledge proofs off of it to say that, yes, this output is actually worth 100 Monero, and I am actually spending 100 Monero. I am not taking an output worth 100 Monero and spending 5 million Monero. So right now we have these two different things. We have the output key and the amount commitment. And then we also have yet another item. We have the quote key image generator. So again, we use key images to prevent double spends. And these have a very specific way of being generated. And they have their, each of them has their own variable as part of this process. So we're kind of looking at an output as three different things, you know, the output key, the amount commitment, and the quote key image generator, this extra variable that we use for the key images. And the question is, how do we modify full chain membership proofs to either A, handle this inside of itself, or B, not just output this squashed e-note, which under Seraphis was one variable, and that's all we needed. We only needed this one variable. We didn't have to keep track of these three different variables. So either how can we have the full chain memberships proof do this internally, or how can we have it output all three of those variables in a way that's safe and then still lets us do, after the fact, ownership and linkability. So I immediately proposed a sketch. I'm not happy with that sketch. That sketch was fine. It's just not the optimal sketch for a couple of reasons. When I wrote my thoughts more formally, I did a different sketch. And basically, just as when you spend an output, you output a... When you spend an output, again, your output has an amount commitment, and your input also has an amount commitment. Obviously, these can't be the same commitment. We want them to have the same amount, so you can't mint more coins, but we don't want them to look the same, and we don't want anyone to be able to distinguish that, yes, they are, in fact, for the same amount. So what we do is for your input, we apply something, we apply re-randomization. We just redo the randomness within it so that it still contains the same value, but it looks completely different to someone else. And that's what the proposal here is. We have the membership proof, which was prior proposed. We modify it to output not just the squashed e-note, this one variable, yet the output key and the key image generator and the amount commitment. And we do it in a way that all of them are re-randomized, so no outside observer can tell which is which. Then we actually do still add a second proof. So just as Seraphis was proposing using two proofs for this purpose, this also proposes using two proofs. The second proof just internally, you know, undoes the re-randomization and proves that, yes, all of these are consistent and valid and someone isn't lying about what they are, and creates the expected key image. And there's actually a few really interesting effects for this. One, I think our memory requirements for hardware wallets will actually go down, because that's why you don't want one proof for all of this. If you had one proof for all of this, we now have to require hardware wallets, anything that have the private spend key, they suddenly have to do these giant bullet proofs for membership. Because if we just had this one giant proof, then yes, the membership proof would have to have the private key, which means the proof would have to be created by someone with the private key, which means whatever has the private key has to do bullet proofs, which isn't ideal. So we do two separate proofs. I think the second proof I'm proposing will actually be a bit smaller, quite a bit smaller, actually, for hardware wallets, which is nice for them because hardware wallets frequently have very limited memory. So anything that frees up space there is something I'm happy about. But also, I believe we'll provide a series of very nice, let's go with side effects. Right now with Monero, we don't have transaction chaining, and transaction chaining has been something discussed before. Notably, it would allow some, and I emphasis on some layer two designs, layer twos as in payment channels. You know, Doug, if the two of us are frequently sending Monero back and forth, we can just create payment channels to each other. Okay. And then we don't have to do an on-chain Monero transaction. We don't have to tell people on-chain a transaction is occurring. Obviously, Monero is private. They want to be able to tell it's us, and they want to be able to tell the amount. But we don't even have to tell the blockchain a transaction is occurring, because we would just privately keep the data between us. And no matter how many transactions we did, we'd only put one transaction on-chain and only pay the fees once. So yeah, payment channels can be great. And some payment channel designs, which I wouldn't endorse. Like, technically they're enabled, but I also wouldn't endorse them, so I have to caveat that. But some payment channel designs require transaction chaining. Because this separates, because of how I'm proposing this, I think ideally we do get transaction chaining with it, which offers a few nice properties. Theoretically, it would enable some L2 designs for my work specifically on Sarai. Now that I think about it, it lets us get a bit more efficiency done, so on and so on. So transaction chaining is just a nice property to have. It was actually something that was planned to come with Seraphis. So kind of also jumping the gun on that feature. And then I was reviewing one other aspect of privacy, not privacy in the moment, but privacy against a quantum computer. Because it doesn't matter if you believe they're happening in 5 years. It doesn't matter if you believe they're happening in 10 years. It doesn't matter if you believe they're going to happen in 100 years. It doesn't change that the moment someone has one, unfortunately, they can de-anonymize most of the internet today. And that would include Monero. So being robust against this is kind of this idea of forward secrecy. No matter what happens in the future, your data is still private. So I was looking at extending this as well with forward secrecy. The design isn't quite there yet, but it's not technically impossible. It's not there yet. I don't want to propose forward secrecy as happening with this next step, because I really want to develop, plan, and execute a very efficient and very tight timeline for full chain membership proofs in order to ensure that they happen with the respect and expediency they deserve, and they don't languish in development for another few years.
Can you just explain forward secrecy real quick? Like what exactly?
Sure. So it's if you make a transaction today, a quantum computer, whenever it comes out, 5 years, 20 years, 100 years.
Oh, okay.
Years,
okay. You're being quantum proof for the future. Okay.
Right. It wouldn't make us quantum proof against inflation attacks, but it would prevent a quantum computer from figuring out who sent transactions. Right now, a quantum computer against Monero can remove sender privacy. They can pick any output and they can find the exact input it was spent in. So forward secrecy, at least as I'm using it here, would be a quantum computer could not determine what input spent in output. The design isn't impossible, but it requires a more complicated proof. And that more complicated proof would be the proof executed by a hardware wallet. So I don't want to propose it at this time, but it is something else I was considering.
That's amazing that it's a potential possibility already at this point. Like you see a path towards that.
Well, I actually wouldn't have considered it possible if key images. Explaining that will require me explaining the math of key images for about 15 minutes. So I'll refrain from that. But it's not possible it's impossible no matter what proof you use with how we currently define output keys and how we currently define key images. So because of that, the idea is, of course we would have to change how output keys are defined, and we'd have to change how key images are defined in order to enable forward secrecy. And unfortunately, doing that would restart the privacy pool. We'd have to make a new set of outputs, a new set of privacy. And that was being proposed with Seraphis because of all of the improvements Seraphis brought. I was looking at it. There's ways it's not technically impossible because we wouldn't tweak the definition of key images. And as long as the definition of key images, it's complicated. There's a lot of caveats here. Please don't quote me on this. But basically, as long as the key image for any prior output is still the key image for that prior output, it doesn't make that prior output spendable again, and we can continue forward. So I was like, technically, we would slightly change the definition of key images, but all outputs that were prior spent would have the same key image. Therefore, they would not become spendable again. With that in mind, we would actually change the definition of output keys. And that's what kind of enables this design. So this is a very future thought, and it's not something I want to get into right now. It's actually backstory for what I was wanting to get to. But while I was looking into forward secrecy, I noted that technically one could redefine output keys. Right now, output keys are just a very traditional public key. It's your private key with the mathematic operations behind it to convert it to a public key. I'll be very vague and non-mathematical about this. And I was noting while I was actually reviewing this proof, technically you can define your public key differently. Instead of defining your public key as this one private key converted to a public key, you can add this extra element to it. And if you add this extra element to it, you can still produce proofs and still spend the output. And that was initially a concern for me. Like, oh, people can now throw random stuff into their public key and my work doesn't care. Should it care? Is this an issue? Is this a vulnerability? Looking through it, no, it appears fine to me. Obviously, we will have to get this manually reviewed. And if we need to tweak it so that these extra elements are banned, they're banned, so be it. I already wrote up the math on how they would be banned. But as part of this, what I noted is, because you're technically allowed this extra element, I believe we might actually be able to discuss what I would call an outgoing view key today. As in, the ability to detect when an output you received is spent. So if you have a light wallet, you know, and you don't have the private key, but you're still making sure you receive Monero, now your light wallet would automatically be able to tell when your private key did come online and did actually spend Monero. So if you do decide to make a transaction from your hardware wallet, you or from your cold storage device, you wouldn't have to, you know, copy data from your cold storage device and plug it into your light wallet and be like, yep, here's all the outputs I spent, here you go. Your light wallet, your hot wallet, if you gave it this additional outgoing view key, would automatically be able to detect, oh, by the way, you pulled out your cold storage device and spent these outputs. Yep, I can just detect that because you gave me this extra private key. So was looking at forward secrecy. It's not quite there yet, and I don't want to propose it at this time, but I did actually notice that it would enable us in the future to change how we define output keys. And with that, there's also the potential we could introduce outgoing view keys, the ability to detect when an output was spent. So that's actually something I'd really look forward to, because the inability to detect when an output you received was spent is actually very annoying for me. A lot of the work I did over at Sarai was handling exactly that, because we have this, you know, adversarial multisig. You know, we have, let's say, 10 guys in a room, and if any 7 of them can manage to agree to, they can just take the XMR for themselves. And obviously, Sarai has this economic design around that to ensure that there's never incentive to do so. And if it ever happens, Sarai is expected to be able to recoup the value, so on and so on. But that doesn't change that we do have to have procedures in order to detect if it did in fact happen, because we have to know if it did in fact happen in order to move forward with the slashing process, where we slash their stake of presumably greater value. And as part of that, I had to write all of this code because we can't detect when an output is spent. So we have to write all of this other code that isn't detecting when an output is spent, but is detecting this other class of behaviors which are inherent side effects to it. It's a whole thing. So yeah, outgoing view keys would actually just be very great for cold and hot wallets. It'd be great for multisigs. It'd be great for my personal work. And I believe that's something that would also be enabled by this, which I'm very happy about.
That's amazing. The main reason that that view only wallets don't work well, right? Because you can't tell if an output has been spent. And when you get the change back, It shows up as new money, not as a change output.
Right. And practically, you can assume, hey, this transaction had a ring of 16, and for every single input it had, one of the ring members was an output I detected as mine. And oh, so this looks like previously, the change amount from that. So it's not that incoming U-keys can't already guess with incredibly high confidence. It's that technically, yes, they're guessing. And now they'd be able to know with certainty. And that also helps with, you know, like charity auditing. You want to donate to a charity, you can see how much money the charity's received, and you can also see how much they've spent. That would be one of the great benefits of this kind of outgoing view key. So it started out as just full chain membership proofs. By design, it kind of mirrored the proof separation within Cerevis. And I'm hoping to actually get, you know, after having made this proposal, which was just for full chain membership proofs, it sounds like we might get a few really nice features out of it as well.
Amazing. I mean, this sounds like a renaissance in Monero moment here, right? All these things. I had no idea. If you could just step back for a moment, I think maybe you did say it, but if you can kind of rephrase it, what was the moment that it was realized that essentially full membership proofs can be implemented pre-Cerevis into bullet proofs? Like, what? Has that been realized already for some time? It's been theoretical for some time. I know, like, Liam Egan, I think, has participated in this, right? And then I was looking back at some of these other, like, Bulletproof plus papers. Were these things talked about then, or did everything just kind of come together recently with this realization?
A few comments. The full chain membership proofs has always been proposed to use the slightly modified Bulletproofs. So the fact that it's being done with bulletproofs isn't, you know, the newer exciting part here. Sorry, a bit of the sniffles today. The discussion about doing it pre-Cerevis with FreeCT is one I briefly considered before, but I kind of wrote it up as non-possible. Because... the ideas I had for it were, like, we would redefine every address, which is obviously something we do not want to do. It's not something we want to do. It's not pleasant to do. It should not be done. But my idea was, like, we would redefine every address. And with the redefinition of every address, we would make every address have its spend key be something called a Peterson commitment. Then the output keys would be in the form of a Peterson commitment. And then the membership proof would remove the randomness in the Peterson commitment to get to the actual value. You would not be able to distinguish the value from the Peterson commitment in which it came from, which is why it'd be unlinkable. And then you could do pretty standard signatures over it. There's, like, all of these thoughts, and it wasn't that it was impossible, it's that you would need new addresses, and I think one of the concerns is that if someone sent you, they'd be able to detect when you spent your coins. I think that was the concern as well. So if I, you know, if I pay you back, you know, if we're out, we get drinks, I pay you back for picking up the bill in USD, Doug, because you're always eager to pick up some more Monero, then I'd be able to see when you know, oh, 24 hours later, you spent that Monero. You must be grabbing drinks with someone else. Why wasn't I invited? And that's kind of the privacy issues. So it's not that I thought it impossible. It's that what I, like, briefly thought about the design, there were issues with it. If it requires a new address format, obviously that's not something we want to do until Cerevis, because Cerevis does enough things to make it worth it. The reason I move forward with it now is because, one, I had a new idea about how to do it, which would actually be efficient. And two, the estimates for Cerevis, which were being discussed, were longer than my personal estimates. So due to the discrepancy in presumed timing, I wanted to move forward with the quicker option to ensure privacy net.
Do you love coffee and Monero as much as we do? Consider making gratuitous.org your daily cup. Pay with Monero for premium fresh beans And if you like what you taste, send a digital cash tip directly to the Guatemalan farmers that made it possible. Proceeds help us grow this channel, Gratuitous, and Monero.
What can you tell us about Liam Egan and the contributions he's made? Because we've reached out to him. He said he'll come speak at Monerotopia. My understanding is he's played some role in the development of the cryptography in this arena.
Mind if I ask if in person or virtually?
I think we're trying to get him in person. He seemed eager to attend.
All right. But yeah, if they're coming in person, please let me know. I'd love to know about that.
Yeah, I mean, that was the idea. And to get you there as well, obviously, I mean, that would be the dream come true.
So Liam Egan, they're quite smart. They personally did a few different preprints. They did one on the application of elliptic curve divisors for proving, like, this is all mathematical, I know. But they posited using elliptic curve divisors for efficient in-circuit inter-product proofs. We're not looking at doing inter-product proofs. We're solely looking at doing elliptic curve divisors for proofs of scalar multiplication. Don't worry, guys. We're not going all the way up. No, all of this is, you know, mathematical gibberish. But regardless, they said, hey, there's this mathematical structure. It's an elliptic curve divisor. It's inherent to the concept of elliptic curves. It's been, you know, studied here and here before. You can also use them to do efficient proofs about, you know, objects on elliptic curves, about points on elliptic curves. So that was really great because it beats all prior noted ideas on how to do these proofs of, let's just go with scalar multiplication, by at least a factor of two. So by using this, just everything gets twice as fast. And saying that everything gets twice as fast is always great. We love it when things just magically get twice as fast. And one of the other advantages of it is actually the specific ways in which it scales. If we were to use traditional solutions, we would have a non-negligible, I'm trying to think of the best way to explain this. Basically, this is the very non-mathematical way to explain it. We have this private key inside of the proof. It's not actually a private key like, oh, if you leak this private key, you lose all your money. No, it's just this number that only you should know. And we have to convert it to a public key twice. So we would need two of these proofs. And that's annoying. These proofs are most of the work. Proving this private key does in fact match this public key is most of the work we do inside of these proofs and inside of the bulletproof, which we use to prove all of these statements. So with existing work, it would have been, you know, like 2x. And then if you wanted to convert it to a public key a second time, it would have been an additional 1x. So if you do it again, it's cheaper, but it's still a notable cost. With Egan's work, if you do it for the first time, it's just 1x. You just pay this 1x penalty cost. And if you ever have to do it again in the future, there's not really an additional cost. It's effectively free. So because we actually do have to convert a private key to a public key multiple times, Egan's work is not only twice as fast as everything else in the everything else that's prior posited, but for the second time we do it, it's actually near free and not yet another cost. So Ian's work on elliptic curve divisors is just absolutely great for the performance of this work and something I'm truly in love with there. They also posited, I believe they posited their own private cryptocurrency protocol. I want to say Bcash. I'd have to double check if that was the exact label for it, because I believe the Curve Trees authors also posited a private crypto, private currency protocol, and theirs may have been Bcash. I may be confusing the two. But I believe Egan also commented on how you could do one with a pair of recursive bulletproofs, which is really interesting. And then Egan also is doing the work on Bullet, is also the primary author of Bulletproof Plus Plus, where we have Bulletproofs, and then this was improved by Bulletproofs Plus. Bulletproofs Plus just slightly slimmed down the proof, saved a few bytes, which is always appreciated. And then Bulletproofs Plus Plus is actually very interesting in how far it takes it. And there's all sorts of commentary there. But yeah, Bulletproofs Plus Plus is also looking to be very interesting, and I'm very much looking forward to when it's a complete paper, including with all additional review and industry acceptance as something that, yeah, people should be using.
And then Monero would implement that?
Yeah, so two different options. We could implement Bulletproofs Plus Plus for our range proofs, or if it was feasible to apply the same modifications that we did for Bulletproofs, we could also look at using them for our membership proofs, which would actually open up a couple very interesting doors because of how specifically they present the... Sorry, I'm trying to think of the best way to explain this. So this membership proof is done via something known as an arithmetic circuit. An arithmetic circuit is just a long series of math statements and requirements. You know, A times B equals C, C is 1. That lets A and B do whatever, but whatever they multiply to has to be 1, so on and so on. So Bulletproofs presented an arithmetic circuit argument, and then Bulletproofs Plus Plus, of course, carries that and also presents an arithmetic circuit argument. From my understanding, Bulletproofs adds to a power of 2. So powers of 2, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, so on and so on. But what this means is if we have, you know, 200 lines of mathematical statements in this membership proof, it doesn't matter. We have to use 256. Like, even if we don't want those other 56, we need it to be a power of 2. And the closest power to 200 is 256. So no matter what, we're paying for these extra, you know, 56. With Bulletproofs Plus Plus, I believe they give you a bit more flexibility in that you can pad it to either a power of 2 or you can pad it to a power of 3, to my understanding, which is a very slight tweak, but it actually gives you a decent bit more flexibility. And with that flexibility comes performance, which is always something I appreciate.
Amazing. We actually had Benedict Buns on this show back in the day when we first implemented Bulletproofs. This feels like another Bulletproofs moment in terms of evolution of Monero, or actually, I guess, bigger. But that was a major transition for Monero when Bulletproofs were implemented, and we saw the, you know, transaction weight essentially go down overnight, fees go down overnight. This feels like an even larger change for Monero, for all the reasons you're saying. It just opens up all these new doorways, and obviously the biggest thing being that we'll now be essentially perfectly private in terms of hiding, the sender, right?
Still no forward secrecy, but
still no
regarding
forward. Where does that
quantum computers come around?
Where does that put us in, you know, relation to projects like Zcash and others? Has anybody figured out forward secrecy yet, or just only people have, like, kind of?
Such a can of worms you've opened to your dog.
Yeah.
Why do you have to do this to me? I don't believe anyone has solved forward secrecy when the person's address is known. If I know your address, then I can break it apart. You know, if I see your public spend key and I have a quantum computer, I can recover the private spend key. If I see your public view key and I have a quantum computer, I can recover the private view key. I have the private view key and have the private spin key, I can just do the normal scanning process. So I don't believe anyone's done forward secrecy when the address is known.
Amazing.
With Zcash and Firo, their currently deployed privacy protocols are fundamentally better than whatever Monero has today. And I'm not here to contest that. The reasons I don't recommend them over Monero isn't about merchant adoptance or anything. It's about the fragmented user story. It's this story I frequently heard when talking with some Zcash people about, you know, oh, someone has, you know, Zcash in Exodus, and they think, oh, Zcash, it's a privacy coin, I'm private. It's like, no, the Exodus version is the transparent Zcash, you're not private at all, or whatever wallets it is. And I don't believe coins should promote a false sense of privacy. And I'm not here to say that, oh, Zcash is actively and maliciously promoting a false sense of privacy. No, of course I'm not here to claim that. But what I'm noting is because there are ways to use Zcash transparently, and because we can't expect users to always be conscious of what's going on, it's hard for me to say use Zcash, because there's a risk that by saying use Zcash, the user ends up using it transparently. That doesn't change that, yes, theoretically, if you just took Zcash's privacy protocol as an isolate, and you gave it, you know, the same user base and the same amount of transactions occurring, then sure, the on-chain privacy would be far better than Monero's. And the same goes for Firo as well. Then my understanding, Zcash, Orchard, and I believe even Sapling, is forward private if you do not have the person's address. And then Firo, Lelantis Spark protocol has the chance to be forward private, or forward secret, sorry, has the chance to be forward secret, but the currently used membership proof is the one out of many, you know, Groth and Boodle proof, to my understanding, and that specific proof is not forward secret. So Zcash, Orchard, and I believe Sapling is, I don't know about Sprout, but you can no longer use Sprout anyway, so you can only redeem your coins from it, to my understanding. And then Firo's Lelantis Spark could be, the current membership proof is not. But if they move to full chain membership proofs, specifically the work I'm doing, I'm sure that you could implement the same concept of full chain membership proof with some other proof that doesn't have these properties. But the work I'm doing on full chain membership proofs, I believe if they incorporated that, then they would become forward secret with regards to a quantum computer could not break which output was spent when.
All right. Very well explained. Hoping Firo participates in Monerotopia again as well. It'd be cool to get some Zcash people at Monerotopia, right? Get them in the mix.
Agreed. I really would love to mend that relationship. I've heard comments from kind of both sides of it. And what I kind of have to say is that unless the communities do better, I would not expect these. Unless the communities do better, I would not expect the people we would like to have there to want to be there. Mm. Because I actually wrote a brief interview about this prior, but basically, for whatever reason, communities can be toxic to each other, or at least there can be notable toxic elements within each community, which is toxic towards the other community at large. And the justification is being toxic is, oh, well, they're toxic to us. Why should I not just be toxic to them? Why should I be polite and actually talk with them if they're just going to shout things back at me? And honestly, I think with a lot of communities, what we kind of just need is a reset. You know, don't just go, oh, Zcash, no one uses your chain. Oh, Zcash, blah, blah, blah. But actually just have open discussions as Zcash comes up. And if you don't like it, don't comment, oh, you guys suck. Just leave. just don't participate in that conversation. If you want to say, you know, my concerns with CCash are this, this, and this, and, you know, try to provide the counter response, yeah, do so politely. Don't just attack people, because as long as there are enough toxic people in community attacking the other community, that community isn't going to want to participate, and it's just going to foment their own toxicity, and we'll never get anywhere like that.
Yeah. And the, I mean, so much positive can come out of bringing the communities together, especially on a technological level, getting the devs talking to each other. It's a waste to do otherwise. Yeah, maybe we could get somebody down. Who would be an ideal person for us to try to seek from the Zcash development team to get down there?
I mainly know of two researchers actively involved with Zcash. Not to say that there aren't others, just to say there's, you know, two I'm personally aware of and notably know. It is hard for me to recommend either as a candidate at this time. I would be happy to discuss with you privately and also do my best to reflect my concerns, but I don't want to air my thoughts on this publicly at this time.
All right, no worries. No, yeah, didn't mean to put you on the spot with that. By the way,
I think I'm going to say, like, oh, this person would be interested, like, would be great to have, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're willing to. And then they get 100 replies. Oh, you got to come. You got to come. If you don't come, you're a bad person. And I don't want that to be why they don't come.
So they're probably exactly what would happen. By the way, we're moving Monerotopia back to Mexico City. It's not 100%, but we're considering making that transition. We're going to make the decision with the next.
Didn't you make all of this comments here about Buenos Aires?
What's that?
It was all. What about Buenos Aires? What happened?
We're having issues with the marketplace down there that we wanted to work with, and so we don't want to take the risk. We know that it will definitely work out in Mexico City because we're going to team up with all the same people.
It was a gorgeous venue last time.
Yeah, the market was amazing, right? And like we know the woman who runs it, and we know this time we'd be able to onboard all the vendors to Monero in anticipation. We'll improve the internet. We'll actually have electricity running 24/7. We'll have some local nodes running so people can have a smoother experience with Monero. And then we think you just kind of build upon it from there. And it's also more centrally located. Argentina is just far, unless you literally live in Argentina or Brazil. It's just very far for most people. That's the thing.
Let me know.
Hopefully that changes, helps you with your decision for Monerotopia.
The thoughts I already had, combined with the heads up that Ian may be trying to attend, that's done much more than the location. But all right, thanks for the heads up there. I'm hoping I have no prepper friends right now who bought flights in advance.
Well, we reached out to everybody behind the scenes. I'm pretty sure we sent you a message too. So just to kind of, people know that we're transitioning. We didn't officially put it out there yet. This is it, guys. Do not buy your ticket to Buenos Aires. We will announce in a day or two whether or not we fully shipped it to Mexico City. But please do not buy a flight ticket there.
I'd be interested to hear. Let me know.
All right, cool. We've kind of got you going here for an hour already, and this is a Monerotopia. It's not even a Monero talk, but greatly appreciate you taking time. Can you give us some more insight at least to what the actual path forward will look like? I know CypherStack is going to be involved, right? I believe they're going to be doing an audit on this. You can kind of tell us what that's all about, and I know how, depending on how that goes, that may actually prevent the implementation at this stage, and then just let us know what they're doing and then what you're doing and how we get to the end goal here of actually getting it implemented pre-service.
Right. So CypherStack is putting forward, I'm doing my best to think of how exactly I want to phrase this. One moment, please.
Yeah, take your time, man.
CypherStack is putting forward troops for the slight modifications to Volo Crypts, which I keep saying are slight modifications, and we can extensively debate how slight they are, because it is still bulletproofs. Would be adding something known as a vector commitment. So the existing bulletproof already works with commitments, Peterson commitments, which I aforementioned, even though I didn't explain, done my best to keep all of the, you know, very complicated math out of this and try to keep things as simple as possible. And they, so they're trying to put forward security proofs for it. The slight modifications, they're known as generalized bulletproofs. They don't just work with Peterson commitments, they work with Peterson vector commitments. Peterson commitments commit to one value, Peterson vector commitments commit to a list of values. And the authors of curve trees are like, we use generalized bulletproofs to make curve trees work. And then I reached out to them and I'm like, hey, you say you use generalized bulletproofs. Well, what are those? Those are not a thing. You're saying you're using a thing that does not exist. What is this thing? And they reached out and they're like, oh yeah, it's our own custom slight modifications, which we didn't publish anywhere or document. We can send you a link to them. And they sent me this link, and it's all of the mathematical theory. It's like, oh yeah, bulletproofs is an inner product argument, obviously. And it does all of these various inner product relationships, obviously, as one does. And we just add this extra inner product relationship, again, as one does. And yeah, then you get Peterson vector commitments, and it all works out. And I'm like, what am I looking at? What am I looking at here? It's all of this math, and it's all written out. And I reached out to Aaron, Serene Noether, and I'm like, what the hell am I looking at here? because it's just all of these mathematical statements with no actual, it's not, oh yeah, here's the literal bulletproof protocol. You define these variables. You said, you know, you hash these things together. Once you hash these things together, you continue here. No, it was literally just like the algebraic theory behind it. And they're like, oh yeah, I kind of see what it's doing.
And I'm sorry, and just for one second, who was it that proposed that, the general bulletproofs?
Generalized bulletproofs were by the authors of curve trees, who I don't immediately recall the names of, unfortunately.
Okay.
So with that...
But it's essentially, it's never been audited. It's never been proven.
Right. So they did put forward an implementation along with their notes on the algebraic theory. I reached out to Iron about that, and under CipherStack, they did eventually put forward the formalization. You know, here's the algebraic intent that the authors provided. Here's the literal modifications to the bulletproof protocol. And with these literal modifications to the bulletproof protocol is the... This is basically what I needed to implement it. So I implemented those a few months ago, which was greatly beneficial. I think I estimated like 35. I think I was working at like 35 milliseconds back in Monerotopia. But since then, I have managed to move to generalized bulletproofs, which already should be, you know, twice as fast there. So we're looking at something notably smaller, and we may have performance penalties elsewhere and performance gains elsewhere, but I'm really hopeful. But yeah, CipherStack did this formalization. They're like, here's the literal modifications you make to the bulletproof protocol to enable all of this algebraic theory. And right now, CipherStack is putting forward a CCS for funding their development of security proofs for it. And with the proofs is what we would need to actually use and deploy it. Because right now, there's just the idea, and there's a literal modifications to the protocol you can make. And with these literal modifications, yeah, the proofs prove and verify. You know, I can call the proof function, they prove. I can call the verify function, they verify. That doesn't mean someone else can't make a proof of anything that they want. It just means that my proofs, when I call prove and verify, work. So what the security proofs are the formal academic arguments that no one else can call proof unless they're actually proving for honest data. For the expected variables, at least not without it failing to verify. So that's the next step there, and that will give us generalized bulletproofs. If we don't have generalized bulletproofs, we actually have two options forward, which would be a thing. Neither of them are great, and both of them would increase scrutiny because... That is a discussion for another day, but technically we don't need generalized bulletproofs. Practically, yes, it is going to be painful if we don't have them. With generalized bulletproofs, there was also a slew of other tasks kicking off. So I am personally planning to put forward a CCS, not only to cover my development over these next several months, yet also to create a, let's go with slush fund. Basically a discretionary fund held by, you know, however CCS payments are currently held. And instead of needing to put forward new CCSs for auditors, and instead of needing to find, debate, create this statement of work with the auditors and then publicly get feedback on it and publicly raise funds, and that raising may take a few weeks, this slush fund would instead allow much more immediate disclosure. So it's basically, hey, we've already raised the funds. If an auditing company steps up and there's general agreement that they can do the job, we could just immediately ask for such a disbursement. We wouldn't then have to go through the entire CCS procedure. So I'm personally planning to put forward my own CCS for development and for creating a slush fund for auditors. And this will cover things such as, you know, a more formally written proposal for what I'm currently doing. Right now, I've notated all the ideas, but this would be like the literal arithmetic circuit, the actual literal series of mathematical operations used in order to prove it. And then we can immediately have that design, you know, reviewed, even formally verified to ensure its safety. And then with this review and formal verification, the implementation of the circuit, the literal, you know, writing the code that is equivalent to all of those lines on a piece of paper, that could be done at the same time. So as we prove the theory of it, we could also implement it.
Amazing.
So as soon as we verify that, yes, the theory does exactly what we want, then we can immediately audit that the implementation matches the theory. And we can really just, you know, parallelize it. As the next step of review occurs, the next step of implementation occurs. So by the time the prior step of review finishes, the next step of implementation is ready for review. So it's going to be quite a large CCS accordingly, because it's not only scoping my development for the next few months, but it's also including, you know, several months of... It's also presumably including multiple different audits, and audits in this space are unfortunately quite expensive, and also justifiably quite expensive, but also unfortunately. So not only is it my development, but it's also this however many audits, and it's going to be a rather large CCS. But yeah, hopefully that gets funded and we can move forward, because I do believe this is critical to Monero.
It will absolutely get funded. Call now, right now. When do you guys think you're going to post it?
So the CCS for approving generalized bulletproofs is already live. I do need to work out a couple of things with Jay Berman. I've been talking with them about this CCS and this slew of work. I need to know if they want to be included on this CCS, which is for my development and slush fund, or if they want to be included on their own CCS and self-manage it. It's completely up to them. But regardless, we will figure things out, and I'd hope to post it next week.
Awesome. Amazing. What do you think the likelihood that generalized bulletproofs, you know, a proof is found for it?
So if CypherStack cannot create a proof, that does not mean a proof does not exist. It's Marcy said it, just that one was not found. And I just want to be clear about that. Personally, I am quite hopeful, but that doesn't change that until one is realized, it is all hope.
Can't we just ask like ChatGPT, like, yo, find a proof for it?
Yeah, that's not how I want inflation bugs to be added today.
Legit question though. Is AI being used in this realm in any real way yet that's helpful, or just not?
I don't believe so.
Pushing
I would hope no one's using it believing it's helpful. I think if anyone tried to use any LLM here, it would be actively dangerous.
Don't worry, I'm not releasing a cryptocurrency anytime soon. But if I did, I'd be using AI to do it 100%.
LLM coin, the only cryptocurrency coded entirely by a large language model.
Could definitely be a thing. This is a question, you know, no developer likes to answer, but when do we see this actually getting implemented then in terms of timeline?
This one have actually provided a very aggressive time frame form. I would hope for the implementation to be ready within about 6 months.
That's insane. And then,
that's not, you know, guaranteeing the academic review, formalization, audits, and all of that. But I hope implementation to be done within 6 months, and I'd hope for notable progress to have been made on all of the academic review with that. I do have to distinguish implementation from integration, though. Right now I'm discussing implementation. Integration is technically something distinctly discussed, and I would hope that that is also done in that time frame, but I cannot speak with as much confidence on that time frame.
So potentially at Monerotopia in November, we could be doing a presentation on the completion of implementation.
On the proposed implementation of the proofs itself? Yeah, possibly.
Wow. Amazing. I got no more questions. Tux, what do you got? I'm just blown away over here. Honestly, this is epic, and it feels like it came out of nowhere. Obviously, you know, you've been inching us toward it for quite some time, but
it's just being fast-tracked due to the ongoing situation. Well, I mean, not ongoing, but could happen again. I was just looking at the CCS page here. Here's the generalized bulletproof security proofs under the IDEA, and there's also Seraphis Wallet Work, and then Seraphis General Paper Review. So this is the new one that was the new IDEA that was published yesterday.
That's the yep. Okay.
Yep.
CypherStacks. Yeah, let's get it funded, guys. Do it. Be part of history.
200x more.
Narrow history.
220. Not up for funding yet, currently an idea. Once it gets moved to the funding phase, then everyone can start donating.
Luke, thank you so much.
Yeah,
stick around, obviously, if you can, but, you know, we understand if you
can. Yeah, no, I'd be happy to stick around for a bit. I think I am going to turn my camera off so I can work as I listen and chime in, but yeah, happy to.
If Gonbat wants to do the Argentina thing, that'd be great, but I was trying to see if I could provoke Luke into talking about something that he barely mentions, but I think that he would speak much better to than myself. Like, if we can all just ignore the little bit of bias and self-interest in the response, I've been saying for quite some time that in order to grow the talent pool, we need to find a way to pay more for quality developers. Mm-hmm. And that involves direct engagements with businesses, because business to business is the largest part of any economy, basically anywhere in the world, except some like third world that's, you know, government funding and all of that. But I was hoping that you could speak to the fact that a lot of talented developers are forced to choose between an upper middle class lifestyle or working on projects that actually matter to them. Or they have to split their time, which dilutes their focus. I hear a lot about this stuff, but I don't think that it reaches the broader audience at the level that it should. So do you think you could chime in a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things I think is that obviously developers willing to take a haircut in order to work on Monero and volunteer in that regard. You know, the very pure cypherpunk ethos is, you know, like, oh yeah, people should just do things and that will be great. The end. And it's not that I don't respect that. And it's not that I don't like people working on things solely because they believe in them with no need for external incentives. But the fact is, you know, people need money to pay for food, shelter, water, kind of necessities here. And with that, yeah, there is payment. And that's why the CCS exists. And also solutions like Magic. Donate to Monero Development if you're in the U.S. Get tax-deductible donations because Magic is a 501c3 charity. Yeah, so there are solutions to fund developers. Yet with these solutions, every developer, even if they take money from the CCS or from Magic, they are largely still donating their time because of the opportunity cost that's posed. The job market for talented cryptographers right now is insane. Truly, it's really insane and out there. So for any developer to not receive an insane paycheck, it is them donating that opportunity and the opportunity cost with it. So one of the things I think is that the Monero CCS needs to be more open to paying people more. I do think that's starting to change, and I'm hopeful it is. The other thing I think is that developers need to be willing to ask for more. You know, I've seen prior posited the idea of like this, you know, oh, well, the CCS average or the standard is generally this. And that causes some developers to not bother submitting proposals. And what I personally think is that, no, if that's too low for you, it's not that you shouldn't submit a proposal, it's that you should submit a proposal. Like, you just, if an amount that the CCS is generally paying is too low for you, that does not invalidate your own proposal. And hopefully, as we get more proposals and we realize what we're missing out on by not be willing to pay more, only then could the Monero community take a step back and evaluate how stingy do we want to be here, or how forthcoming with funding do we want to be here. Because obviously, I'm not saying if someone walks in and says, for $1 million, I'll like fix this, you know, one bug where we have a typo in some text. No, I'm not saying that any proposal that improves Monero is justifiable regardless of the cost. What I am saying is that when developers do not make proposals because they do not believe it will go through, they don't put their thumbs down on the scale, weigh the CCS towards paying more in the future, and they remove data from Monero by creating the appearance that there simply aren't developers, when the truth is there simply aren't developers who are willing to submit out of belief of what we're likely to pay. So Monero community, I think, needs to be more open. Developers, I think, need to be willing to submit proposals, even if they don't expect them to go through. The other thing I note is that the CCS creates a lot of bureaucracy, not because, you know, you have to fill out all of these forms to go through it, but because of the whole, you know, review process, and it can take several weeks. Like, it might take a couple of meetings just to get your CCS listed, and then it might take a few weeks for it to get funded. And that alone has caused us to lose developers before. Just the amount of effort that goes into the CCS system. So what I'd actually would really love to see, and I brought this up a few weeks ago, is for an organization such as Magic, which I am a committee member for the Magic Monero Fund, I would actually love to see them start just outright hiring developers. Not solely hosting fundraising for developers, but outright hiring developers with like 1-year contracts. And then in 6 months, we would restart the fundraising process, not for each individual developer in each individual line item of work, but actually for the entire development team. And then, you know, that might take 3 months to complete. And then 3 months before the current development team's contract is up, we would let them know, yes, we are able to extend your contract another year, so on and so on. And we would be able to provide, ideally, stable employment that minimizes the headache for these developers and brings a quality amount of talent to Monero. The main reason Magic is not immediately moving forward with that is because in order to move forward with that, we have to, like, it would pretty much be we walk out next week and say we are looking for $200,000 to start hiring developers. And that is a very tall ask for us to make. So it's something I proposed as a long-term goal, something I believe the committee generally agrees would be great if we could do it, but is a discussion that we have to work towards. And me talking about it here is me trying to work towards it. I'll also note that with my upcoming CCS, I plan to create a slush fund so that we can more quickly contract outside parties. And that's just in the matter of, in the name of efficiency on the specific issue, full chain membership groups. But in similar spirits, both a retainer for CypherStack, who currently employs Aaron, also known as Saray Noether, in order to ensure access to their research talent and also provide a more consistent stream of payment for CypherStack. That was proposed, and even just an MRL, Monero Research Lab, sort of general fund was proposed, such that MRL can dispatch such contracts without going through the entire bureaucracy of the CCS. So I definitely think that there's change occurring and there's change being worked towards, but I think the community needs to be open to it. And when the time comes, the people with a significant financial interest in Monero need to be willing to donate to that development.
I'd just point out, there's something really sexy about how, you know, the bleeding edge of technology and, you know, the stuff that drives interest in these projects are really bad at driving interest in funding these projects. But there are so many solutions at every level. Like if you're mining Monero, you could just send the money to a wallet that, you know, funds these projects. Or another thing is the bounty system has its own advantages. But I think that people don't understand, if you are, I mean, we'll just say it, an underpaid developer, and your cash flow situation, you're looking at, I could get paid in 3 weeks, maybe. You know, people have to pay their rent every 4 to 5 weeks. And there's many solutions to this problem. But if we can't alleviate people who are willing to dedicate a lot of time to this, you know, and then there's also the question of, this is a highly cerebral undertaking. So if you add stress to the question of getting the work done, well, will I get paid? When will I get paid? Or somebody is motivated to tackle one of these problems, right? They want to work on this project. But, you know, if they're looking for work for 4 weeks as a developer because they don't know that they're going to get paid, by the time, you know, something is even approved, they may have a different job. They may have other obligations. So,
yeah,
it's one of the reasons why I wanted you to speak to it, because you have been more transparent in other conversations about it. I've been screaming from the rooftops forever that this is a serious issue. So I appreciate you being transparent about that.
I think there's actually an even more damaging aspect to this than the irregularity alone. It's that if you submit a 3-month CCS, 3-month, I believe, is a reasonably common term for an development. If you submit a 3-month CCS and then you finish your CCS and prepare your next 3-month CCS, it may take you a month for that next CCS to start, which means that for every 3 months, you have to wait a month, which means out of every 4 months, you're not working nor getting paid for a quarter of that time, just because you're waiting for the wheels to turn. And that's why, yeah, I actually really want to move forward this discussion with Magic outright hiring developers. The issue is to offer such safety guarantee, lack of headaches to the developers. Like, even just to start soliciting candidates and doing interviews, we don't want to interview a bunch of people and be like, oh, we can offer you a job and we want to, but we have to wait a month to see if the funding proposal goes through for your 1-year contract. It's all so ridiculous. And that's kind of why we're waiting to move forward and trying to talk this up a bit more, or at least I'm trying to talk it up a bit more, because it's going to end up with us asking on a leap of faith, without us having proposed any results yet, asking for enough to pay a 1-year salary, just to be completely raised to donations. And after we ask for a 1-year salary, if we move forward with this idea, I have to be clear, I'm speaking as an individual here and not a representative of Magic and not a representative of the committee as a whole. I'm just speaking as an individual and an idea I would like to see the committee execute on. But not only would we have to ask for this 1 year salary, but 6 months in, only halfway into it, we have to ask for the next year in order to ensure that by the time that's fundraised, we have certainty and can give any developers the appropriate heads up about their status of renewal. And that's a very large task to ask. So yeah, it's definitely going to have more conversations. And as you said, more transparency to make the community more open-minded about it.
You know, and by my calculations, if we could get consistent donations to a fund that was well managed, I mean, we're talking about maybe 900 people donating $10 a month for a very comfortable salary. We've already demonstrated that people who are passionate about Monero development are willing to take less to do what they believe in. But if you add a layer of security to it, it's a much less anxiety-inducing proposition. So as an example, if I'm doing contracting work, right, I'm going to add a buffer to, for one, am I going to get paid? And for two, when the contract is done, I'm looking for work again. So it adds extra cost when we don't have a plan for paying out over many, many months, because the person has to take additional risks. And what really bothers me about this entire thing is a lot of people who are motivated to work on Monero, you know, they have families or they have, you know, things where they can't actually afford to take such a risk. And they might be the most adequate individuals for the job. So, I mean, I really hope that people are listening here. Like, it does not take very much to make this happen if we as a community can consistently donate the money. And donations don't have to be the only option. But we are seriously talking about less than $10 a month here for less than 1,000 people to just get one talented developer day after day, month after month. And, you know, I've met a lot of you guys like at Monerotopia. These people are not living high on the hog. And honestly, they probably should be after what they've created. So it's like, if we don't find a way to solve this problem, especially the way that things are going, we're going to see the talent pool dwindle away because it's becoming unaffordable to survive off of bug bounties. It's becoming unaffordable, but I'll get off the soapbox. I just hope people understand this is more important than the tech right now. This is insanely important to solve now.
I do want to make one disclosure, and generally, I do agree. It almost makes me wonder if we should discuss, you know, putting out the change box at events like Monerotopia, trying to do a fundraising drive while we're there for larger efforts. I'll just apply that pressure to Doug and not elaborate at this time. I also want to
totally on board for that, man. Any open to any and all ideas.
Happy to hear. Thank you.
Growing the Monero treasury.
Just in the name of full disclosure and honesty, there is something I want to be clear on. For me personally, I have to decide where I donate my time. So personally, I actually decide to donate my time largely not to Monero, although I have... I'll get to that in a second. I largely donate my time to my own project, Sarai, you know, decentralized exchange. And with that, you know, stuff like Monero Sarai. Monero Sarai is a Monero library, which implements the Monero transaction protocol and is meant as a public good for the Monero community. And it's not something I've ever requested funding for. There are discussions to request funding for its audit. That may actually be something I publicly fund. But largely, I personally donate my time to Sarai and not Monero. With regards to my work directly on Monero, like with full chain membership proofs, I did prior request retroactive funding. So I did take the risk. You know, if it wasn't going to get funded, I wasn't going to get paid for the work I did. But I was fine with that because I thought it needed to be done. I thought I could efficiently do it. And I accepted I may not get paid for it, but I believed in it. But I did request retroactive funding, and that did go through and have been paid out and everything. So that's great. With my upcoming work on full-time membership proofs, I also am planning to request funding for that. And it's not because, you know, I don't like Monero. I obviously do like Monero. I just have to choose where I donate my time. And personally, I'm currently donating my time to my own project, Sarai, and not Monero directly. So I do want to be transparent about that before, you know, people start thinking, oh, Luke is great. They donate their time. I largely do not directly donate my time to Monero. Though also I do work on some things for Monero that I don't put under a CCS. So yes, I do still donate some time to Monero.
Extremely important topic. Anybody else have any insights, thoughts on this topic before we move on?
I wanted to ask Luke, how about a hybrid approach? Like some people in the Monero community were like extreme fringe. They want to be like direct donation, that model, so that the developer stays in the shadow, but they get their funding. So how about hybrid approach like CCS with Rhino and multisig setup, as well as Magic, as well as a culture of direct donation? Is my mic working?
We heard you, man.
So yeah, I wanted to hear your thought like that, a hybrid approach of like CCS with multisig, Rhino, or whatever, then like Magic funds want to pay less tax in the US, as well as a culture of direct donation, hybrid approach.
So obviously all of these fundraising systems are additive, and that's the really great thing about this. You know, if Magic, you know, does great, it doesn't make the CCS disappear and evaporate. It just means that the CCS is available for the people who want to do the CCS, and Magic is available for the people who want to do Magic. With regards to Rhino specifically and multisig, that's more about how these programs would internally operate, and it's not really about the effects of how they work and how they move forward. But yeah, keeping the CCS, but also adding additional highlights to Magic. Because one of the reasons Magic is great, in my opinion, not to say that it's, you know, better than the CCS, it's an alternative, but one of the reasons it's great, in my opinion, is one, it can do USD payments for people who need who are in the US and need a more traditional income. And two, it actually can raise a bit less because we no longer need to take the standard, you know, oh, 10% for volatility. A lot of these CCS proposals add 10% for volatility. But as soon as Magic receives coins, it can immediately convert them to USD. And in the process of converting it to USD, no longer be affected by volatility with regards to fiat. So I definitely think there should be a hybrid approach of a bunch of different funding mechanisms. But I think that's largely what we already have. And it's just about putting the proper emphasis on each one and covering the areas not just covered, which kind of goes back to my employment commentary. There's not anyone right now who will offer you a one-year contract to work on Monero. The best you might get is, you know, a one-year contract to work at Cake Wallet, and then that may have you, as part of your work on Cake Wallet, fix some bugs of Monero, or you might, you know, Bic might be generous and allow you to spend some of your time on Monero. Because I'm sure, yeah, if Monero has some bug or slowdown with its RPC or infrastructure, and that's affecting you over at Cake, well, it's free open source software. The easiest way for you to fix the issue at Cake would be to fix the problem upstream. But that doesn't change that no one right now will just give you a salaried employment. No one will give you dental, which is the biggest outrage in our modern society. And that's kind of why I want Magic to grow to also cover that angle. And yeah, with, as you said, it's also about the community being mindful and open to these ideas.
So I don't know how much people know about, for example, like Red Hat Linux or some of the, I think it's called Canon, the people who do Ubuntu. Do you remember what it's called, Luke? I don't remember, but...
Canonical.
Canonical, yeah. I apologize. There are business models in Monero for service, but it should not be the responsibility of developers to do that. And that's kind of what Vic does, for example. Taking open source software and turning it into a business model does require a certain expertise in the realm of business. It is harder than running a business based on either conventional services rendered or manufacturing or something like that. But not only can it be done, it has been done for over 30 years with operating systems and open source software. There are so many opportunities for somebody who isn't a software developer to deal with this problem. And I would argue that it's probably more important because software developers, they can work a lot of places, but they cannot live without getting value for their talent. But a business entrepreneur can create opportunities for those people if they have the wisdom to do so. And it's even more fun because it's an additional challenge. So people could take, if you have been looking for how you can facilitate the development of Monero, you don't have to learn how to code. You can poach coders out of places like the software stack developers at Google or all of these other places by offering them the opportunity for employment that they would seek for doing something that's more noble.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask another question, right, regarding Swan Putchin membership group as well as what do you see with the performance upgrade, with performance issue regarding Putchin membership group with the modified bullet group, and what are your thoughts about modified like bullet group plus, which is Monero is currently using, as well as for future like bullet plus plus? Is it possible to use like directly implementation of bullet group plus plus with full chain membership group?
If we're moving on to the prior topic then, do you work originally was done with Bulletproofs Plus, and my retroactive funding was for the implementation that was with Bulletproofs Plus? I did not implement it with Bulletproofs Plus, or rather, I did not implement it with generalized Bulletproofs Plus. Instead, I implemented with Bulletproofs Plus and this shim around it, which was not pleasant at all and was not great. When the generalized Bulletproofs formalization was made available, the literal changes needed for Bulletproofs to become generalized Bulletproofs, I actually did move my work over to generalized Bulletproofs, and that did not appear in any CCS, and it will not appear at any future CCS. I initially implemented a Bulletproofs Plus that turned out to be invalid. That was my fault, or at least I perceived it as my thing to own up to. So I personally made the decision to move it to generalized Bulletproofs without involving the CCS. I'm just clarifying this because it goes back to my prior commentary about how I donate to Monero. Before generalized Bulletproofs was formalized, we did actually inquire with CipherStack about creating generalized Bulletproofs Plus and moving forward with that instead of moving forward with generalized Bulletproofs, because not only would it be a tiny bit smaller, but it would set the stage for Bulletproofs Plus Plus, because they introduced this academic thing, a norm argument. And the norm argument of Bulletproofs Plus Plus is argued as comparable to the weighted inner product argument of Bulletproofs Plus, which is evolving the inner product argument of Bulletproofs. So basically, we did consider generalized Bulletproofs Plus. The math did not work out. It's not that it's impossible to create this generalized Bulletproofs Plus. It's that Aaron, sorry, Dother, did spend time on it and did not create results. So Bulletproofs Plus kind of sees out, and Bulletproofs Plus also wouldn't be worth it upon further review, because it would be a tiny bit smaller, but to my understanding, it would also be twice as large. to with regards to time to verify. So twice as slow, despite only being a tiny bit smaller. With Bulletproof Plus Plus, there is the opportunity for review and further, you know, hopes of greater performance, but I really can't comment on that at this time.
So what are your thoughts about Seraphis and Swellus Gen is upgrade? Means the will we see like with development expanding, or will we see like within like 2 years? Like right now, the discussion is only either of criticism or either of performance upgrade.
The estimates discussed regarding Seraphis, which is what caused me to do this full team membership proofs work now, was that Seraphis was presumably at least, and I do mean at least 2 years out. Not, you know, maybe in 2 years, but at least 2 years out. And that's what caused me to do my work now. With regards to future improvements, there's definitely a few, but I think it's a long discussion with a lot of options, and it's not really worth getting into right now versus after we've taken this first step.
Okay, that's great. But do you see, like, for the future, since Monero is in, like, an adversarial mode, like, we have lots of enemies with the state and the central government and other stuff, do you think in the future we will need more cryptographers, a culture of cryptography to make sure that the research and development of, like, the research we are facing, like Champions, Seraphis, as well as Bulletproof Plus Plus, along with Putin membership group, like, it's taking a lot of delay. So do you think in future we have to tackle that problem that we need more cryptographers in our camp?
I'm never against more cryptographers, yet the goal with full chain membership proofs is to finally establish full sender privacy. And once we've established full sender privacy, that gives us a lot of time. Because if we have full sender privacy, we have full amount privacy, and we have full receiver privacy, we are kind of good with the privacy. At that point, our only concerns would be metadata and forward secrecy. Forward secrecy is actually very important to me, and I don't want to dismiss this. But the goal with full chain membership proofs is to get to this minimally viable point where technically all improvements are optional, not because they're required. And you can debate how optional they are. You know, if someone starts spamming the blockchain and our current cryptographic proofs aren't fast enough, or if Monero overnight onboards all 7 billion people on Earth, and we can't handle, you know, the combined transaction load of 7 billion people. Obviously, we will need more efficient cryptographic proofs, and that will require this field of cryptographers you discussed, which is why it's still important to culture cryptographers, culture focus on research, et cetera, and et cetera. But I do want to note that technically, the privacy will be at this, you know, minimum level.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, we need post-quantum stuff too. And regarding the, I think we should discuss about the Argentina matter, because, yeah, I think the major problem is the IMF as well as the Financial Action Task Force. Because those guys, their goal is like client-state model. They are an empire, let's face it. It's the neo-American empire. So, and look at the Democrat Party. So they are in charge. So they want to continue that empire. So they want client state. They don't want allies. They just want client state. So yeah, I think God had fire, and if we can discuss what's the matter with Argentina.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so first get the facts. So basically this new legislation is part of a new anti-money laundering law that was planned. It was designed by the previous government, so the Peronists, and it was already half approved. And so, you know, a few weeks ago, it was voted on Congress, and, you know, what Milei congressman said was that we are not, you know, they said that they are not
okay with this legislation. They have a lot of criticisms against it. However, the FATF is already on the country. They are auditing us right now. And because we don't want to be cut off from international credit at this moment, the Congress, Milei's congressmen decided to vote for it anyway, keeping the promise that, they want to rediscuss it later and actually fix it and make it reasonable. But for the time being, it was voted as it is. Yeah, it's obviously pretty bad because it was designed by socialists, but it's pretty much the only thing available at the moment. And so what I think on it is that, there's a lot of libertarians criticizing Milei because of, for example, his interviews, he preached about the free market and how much harm the state causes. But yet, he's president now, and Argentina still has capital controls. It still has, huge restrictions in commerce. The tax pressure is still insane, and the central banking still exists. And you think, why why someone like Milei, still maintains this kind of thing? And, what I think is that it just takes time, right? Because the financial system,
It's a minority. It's a minority government. And I think the thing is, either they are not coordinating with the Mises Institute or the Firearms Policy Coalition or the Guns of America, those guys. Because the thing is, they need dollar. And the way to get dollar, it's Argentina is 90% state-owned. So they have the state. They could manufacture guns and make a law mandatory everywhere. Every people have to buy a gun and they will get dollar instantly. So the thing is, it's the priorities. They have to set their priorities, right? They have to look at the important thing, right? They need the Second Amendment. Otherwise, the Libertarian Project is dead. And one wrong election, one incorrect government, and it's all gone.
Right. So Milei has to, pick the fights he wants to take on. For example, why didn't he delete the central bank on his first day? I would love for that to happen. But if he did, the central bank has a lot of debt. And if it disappears overnight, it has to pay back that debt. And the only way to do it is to print that money because it has no money. So it has to print that money, and that's four times the monetary supply. So that's hyperinflation. That's why he cannot, end the central bank yet. To do that, he has to put it back in shape. And to do that, he needs dollars. So, it takes time. He needs to follow a plan. He can't just, get rid of everything because everything's just so broken. It's barely held back together that, these things take time. And it's frustrating, but I think people are being a bit unfair as well.
Yeah, another thing I found interesting is that he stopped the spending also, the money printer. I think he told he will make a law to make it illegal to even print money. But there is another problem. The existing money is still there. He's not burning the supply. He could do 10% allocation. He will buy all the notes and then 10% he will burn them. Eventually, he could delete the peso entirely, and then you will get the political might because everyone will be using dollar or gold or monero, whatever. Then I think it will fix the situation. I think still the problem is he's a minority government and it's a client watch state. U.S. will try the Democratic Party as well as the neocons, neolibs, those Brussels people. They will try to make it Argentina into a colony. That's a problem. Argentina is not a nuclear armed state. It has a great geography. But the thing is, militarily, it's worldwide. Too poor.
Yeah. I think there's a certain issue of missing the forest through the trees here. The single greatest thing that happened with the election of Malay is the undermining of the all-pervasive godlike nature of government. And when we talk about governments, we talk about these monolithic institutions that don't actually exist. It's like talking about phlogiston. It's not real. There's men with guns playing mind games with other men, and some of them don't have guns. And the power that exists behind Malay being even in the institution of government is the fact that a large blow to the permanence of the bureaucracy state was done in the minds of individuals. But whether it was a concession by the deep state to keep people participating or not, whether it was an organic movement of ANCAPs and now he's in the government trying to make things happen, maybe he's legit, maybe he's not. It's irrelevant.
The CIA wants some of any guy, because it's like they are also, let's face it, United States militarily, it was a hyperpower. Now it's a declining superpower. So they also want some.
Well, my point, ITP, is that even that comment, it still does it, because the power of the United States from the very beginning was its productive capacity on an individual level. And it's the same with Argentina, which is when you're an export economy with stuff that is so prized around the world, right? Your power is in the productivity of the individual. And the only thing that gives the state any power is how much they take from the individual. And you know, I don't even know if Malay exists, right? Maybe he's some AI generated video somewhere. I don't know. I've never met the guy. I don't know anything about him. But what I do know is the moment in which a parking ticket receives any power is going to boil down to two things. Either somebody has a gun in my face and they're forcing me to comply, or I willingly comply by transferring value to the state because I got a little piece of paper. And if you don't acknowledge what is the reality of the situation, then what you're going to do is you're always going to be caught up in this idea of these bureaucrats over here are leveraging this pressure over there, and so it caused this person to do that, or we're speculating on what people are thinking. And even if they tell us what they're thinking, it doesn't matter. It's what they're doing, right? And what is happening right now is a powerful movement is becoming complacent. And it doesn't matter if the guy is legitimately trying to follow the values that he presented to those who, I guess, allegedly, theoretically voted for them or whatever. Money is an entirely faith-based institution. It is a religion. Government is a faith-based institution. It is a religion. And people are practicing the art of worshiping the government when they're waiting for somebody else to take the pressure off of other people who are deeply invested in the religion. There's this concept in voluntarism that is all but dead, but when I started my voluntarist anarchist journey, we had this thing that we called the magic suit, right? Where a normal human being wakes up and is a normal human being, and then he puts on his magic suit, his police uniform, his military fatigues, whatever, and he is now exercising the will of the state. What's the difference between that and a priest putting on his goofy thing? Or what's the difference between that and a palace guard putting on his stupid hat, right? When you allow people to believe that through the magical powers of a badge or something, they are no longer themselves, they are exercising the will of the state. But the thing is the reason they believe that is because you believe that. When you talk to a cop as though he's a person, and then he says, well, the law is blah, blah, blah. And you say, but you're the one doing it. Okay. Either you choose to exercise your imaginary magic suit powers or you don't. You have to force people to acknowledge that this is a religious institution. There is no way that some guy in Brussels is going to write a document and then it is going to magically compel a farmer in Argentina to not sell his cow to the Chinese. This is literally all theater. Okay. And when we talk about, nuclear armed state this, and when we talk about, well, you see, because the central bank, it's underfunded by magic fiat Fed notes. And because it doesn't have, all of a sudden the debt is just transferred to the people of Argentina. No, you tell them to go blank themselves. See how I clean it up, Doug? I'm getting better.
Yeah. Dude, amazing rant. This is a top fiver right here.
There is no debt, people. There's nothing backing any fiat anything. It's not
something they want
to. You're allowing the momentum of the anarchist movement to be undermined. Because when, you know, the Democratic People's Republic of Kyrgyzstan is coming along and saying, well, I have bonds that were issued to your great-great-grandfather, and so you're not allowed to be free because my great-great-grandfather, you know, used leveraged buyouts with slave labor and all of it. You have to call them on their blank, blank, and tell them that this is an unacceptable premise. I don't actually practice your religion. You're delusional, and I'm not interested. All right,
Let's hear from Gambat.
Yeah, something I want to point out is that, one thing, these new regulations are, are the same ones that are in El Salvador. You know, it's just that before we didn't have any anti-money laundering. But also the thing is, sure, this thing got through Congress, but the Cuevas will still exist. Not even the most diehard socialist governments were able to deal with the Cuevas, So I think the Argentinian society, is very resilient to these kind of things. And I think that, one can, when I defend, he can't close the central bank because of debt and all that, it has some actual implications. It's quite different from the, from the Fed. Like, for example, when I talk about debt, that debt is actually the Argentinian deposits. So it's the money that people have on their bank. If the central bank closes, all that money just disappears. Now, is that something I defend? No, I personally don't have any money on banks, on Argentinian banks or any banks, because I don't want to play on that game. That's why I opt out. I use Monero. But it also, I don't want to, pretend that it doesn't matter, because it does, and it needs time to fix. And
Gamba, quick question: there was that rumor that we were hearing. I think it was potentially through executive order, where it was going to be mandated that everybody has to submit, file, and explain what their crypto holdings are. Is that something that might actually happen?
I haven't heard of a new executive order for that. But there was many ones like that from the previous governments. And again, I mean, there's no.
Oh, that has happened in the past in Argentina?
Many times. And, the first time they were like, you have to declare your holdings. The next time, if you declare your holdings, you'll pay less tax. Then it was, please declare your holdings, you'll pay no tax, and yet no one declares it. Because we don't.
Yeah, that's the factor. Like, they will try to disclose. It's like a permanent registry. And we know what happens with permanent registry. Look at Nazi Germany. They did permanent registry of all the wealth as well as all the guns. And then, the Holocaust. But yeah, I think Argentina can be saved. like if they use, if they have the constitution carry Second Amendment as well as a counterculture, like I'm seeing in the streets, all the protests happening, but there is no counter protest. So no one is wearing Eastern flags with guns and just going at them. So yeah, that's the problem.
Let's hear from Alex and Arca. Sorry, ITP. I just want to spread the wealth out here.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, what's up?
Can you hear me? Yeah, we hear you.
Hey, man.
What do you got?
Oh, I think my Bluetooth headset just disconnected.
We hear you well. You got
okay.
Good sound.
Cool. So I've been working on my podcast and my website. This is a new topic. Is it okay?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean,
I was actually hoping to say something about Javier Milei, if that's okay.
Okay, let's jump to drunk dial me real fast. Hold on, let's close out the Milei topic. Go ahead, drunk dial me.
So yesterday, or at least in the last couple of days, I believe, there was a guest on the Tom Woods show. If you don't know who he is, he's extremely well-respected in the libertarian community. Dave Smith, that circle. His name is, he's like Bowtie Mora. His name is Shellbanger. I encourage everyone to listen to that episode. Very recent, last episode or two. He lives in Argentina. And one thing that kind of goes down to the fundamentals of it, what everyone's talking about, is we can't really trust everything we're hearing in the news about Milei. If you know about the Trump very fine people hoax, or the Russia collusion hoax, or the all that other stuff, you understand this. America is divided into two almost evenly split camps who live in completely different realities. And what I've noticed with the Javier Milei news is that he is getting criticized for stuff that, if it's scratched below the surface, just barely below the surface, it turns out to be crap. At least I've noticed over 50% of the time, I'm not even digging that hard. So if you haven't followed the gentleman named Shellbanger, I would encourage everyone to follow him. He's a lot like Bowtie Mora. I think he would be a really great guest, actually, because he could speak to this. It's a great episode. It touches on a lot of crypto stuff. So that's all I wanted to throw up.
Awesome, man. Yeah, DM me that, actually, if you don't mind. We had Bowtie Mora on.
Like Gone with Fire, have you seen like any groups like those American groups coming over there? Like, what's the condition of the party, like Milei's party? Like any anarcho-capitalist guys or any libertarian guys coming to advise them? Because he needs to more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, there are some... in order to achieve, governability, he had to make some compromise. So there are some actors in his trenches that are, not as libertarian as we would like. I just wanted to say that we can fight on both fronts.
He's having support from the Republican conservative side. The Argentinian population. But the thing is, Argentina needs more than anything is the Second Amendment with constitution.
Hold on. Do you hear me?
Hold on. I want to keep the convo going. Gombat, I saw you had thrown in a question about Yuki's and how Zano differs from Monero. This maybe you want to throw that out there to Luke. Any other questions people might have for Luke? I just want to switch back. I feel like we're starting to repeat ourselves now on the Milei topic. So let's move on from Milei.
Sure.
Anybody wants to ask Luke any questions while we still have him? I think he might still be with us.
Yeah, sure. So Luke, just talk about how to implement abukis that are able to see outgoing transactions. And so I was wondering.
Yes, it's just about Zano's auditable. I didn't comment on Zano because I wasn't aware of it. I didn't want to comment on something I didn't know about in case I was wrong. I actually looked it up when I turned my camera off. The way Xano does it is they just remove sender privacy.
Oh.
That is not good.
So I mean, it's only for auditable wallets. So it's if you That's want to be able to audit the wallet of this charity, the charity no longer has sender privacy. And on the one hand,
I don't
a solution. On the other hand, there's a reason we would not deploy such a technique on Monero, because it's not selective disclosure. It's just removing privacy on the blockchain itself. Though I will note the amounts are still private. It's just it's ineligible for usage in ring signatures, which is how that they enforce that when it is spent, it is clear that it is the only output spent because it is directly specified.
Captain Kayaba Nerve, sir, what an honor to speak to you. Do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah. I have a question motivated by a speculation of shifting the Genesis block, but you don't have to go into that. Like, why not to do it? My question is, now with the generalized bullet proofs, is it still a curve cycle, or is it still about curve trees, right?
Prior to Seraphis, we would be using a towering curve cycle, which gives us a curve cycle without switching curves, with a bunch of commentary on the quality, performance, and security of that. So basically, yes, the proofs do still use a curve cycle. It would be a curve cycle. Mathematically, it's really weird. Technically, it's not possible for 8255.
For each block?
Yeah, just for everyone else.
For each block, there would be like a tree, right? I remember you explaining it to me. I looked at your code and it's really difficult for me, but I like to elucidate the things for the common listener. And yeah, so as I understood it, for each block, there is then like a tree which can be pruned. My question is, because I'm sort of against it, of course, this is life. There is also always some guy that is against it. I'm not against it, like, I'm just asking. I find it great, like, all kudos to you. Is it within a window? Can you, like, do the full membership proof without doing the full chain membership proof thing, you know? Or do you always have to have an archival node?
It's not that each block has its own tree. It's that the outputs in every block are added to the tree, just to clarify that. Technically, you could define a new tree every year, and then you could do membership only off that single tree, but there's not exactly benefit to that.
Not even a performance benefit?
Technically, there might be a performance benefit, but then anyone would be able to see what year your transaction is from, which is really messy.
But it would be
like possible, if we were to do that, we wouldn't want to segment it by year unless your focus is on the pruning of historical data. But we would want to just define two trees or however many trees. And then if we have two trees, with every transaction, we would alternate which one it's added to. So it would either be added to tree A or it would be added to tree B. And then because our trees are twice as small, that would change how the math works out a bit regarding performance.
I had a question.
So,
go ahead.
So the answer is yes, it can be done over a time horizon, right?
It can, but I wouldn't support that.
Okay, thanks.
I wanted to follow up on the Xano Auditor wallet. So I look it up. And what you say is true, that when it used to be the case that auditable wallets had to use zero mixins when sending transactions, but apparently that's no longer the case. So now they can use mixins, so I guess ring signatures when sending. So
Wait, you're saying auditable wallets with ring signatures?
Yeah, so... In the docs,
where
they say
are
that...
you seeing that? Because I only pulled up their 2020 link, which says no, they're not allowed to be used in ring signatures.
I think they added it like a week ago, wasn't it? Or like
No. So I'm seeing on the docs that there was a restriction that you cannot use mixins when you send coins from an Auditor wallet. But
yeah, their current doc site, docs.xano.org, Auditable Wallets FAQ. Are there any restrictions? You cannot use mixins when you send coins from an Auditable wallet.
Yeah, I just read that. Yeah, it says below said that it changed in a hard fork, but I got confused. No, actually, that's the case.
Yeah. So, yeah, other restrictions were lifted in a hard fork. That one remains.
Yeah, that's.
And if you do add that restriction, then yes, Auditable wallets are trivial. You know, the whole outgoing view key is to detect when an output is spent. If you remove the ring part of ring signatures, that's very trivial to do. The way this would work is it would allow anyone with the quote outgoing view key to calculate the key image despite being unable to spend the output.
Yeah.
But that would require specialized hardware?
No, not really.
None of this is proposed for using specialized hardware.
What you said before, like we were talking last episode, this quantum resiliency of Monero is the one-time address on the chain because of the Diffie-Hellman key exchange that happens. Does it reveal the sender? Like if I have your address?
No, that's not the target for quantum computers.
But
the one-time key itself is not the target. The one-time key itself is not the target because it is made up of a spend key and a view key. But a quantum computer can only recover the discrete logarithm of the one-time key. So it can't differentiate what part of that discrete logarithm came from the spend key and what part of it came from the view key.
Exactly. So a quantum computer from the one-time key cannot catch your private key, right?
Right.
Because
but
perfectly highly.
Well, they actually can obtain the private key for that output.
For the one-time address?
Yes. They just can't link it to any other one-time address.
Oh, shit. I didn't know that.
Well, so a quantum computer can recover the private key of the one-time address. They cannot recover your spend key, nor can they recover your view key. Once they have the private key for the one-time address, as of right now, they can calculate the key image for the one-time address, and therefore they can determine when any output was spent.
But they don't get the spend key. I'm getting confused here, sorry. They get
so the spend key and the view key, the spend key and the view key are wallet concepts that are used in your stealth address, and then they are used internally. But your spend key and your view key, when instantiated into a one-time key, do create exactly that, a one-time key, a public key only meant to be used once with a private key only meant to be used once. So this one-time key, there is a one-time key that is a private key that is derived from your spend and view key. Quantum computers can recover that one-time key. They can't link it back to your wallet. They can't go from this one-time key to your spend key and your view key, but that one-time key is what's actually used to spend that output if you have all of the other information associated with it.
Exactly. So with the one-time key and the one-time address, and with the quantum computer, you get the one-time key and you are able to spend from just that output, not from any other.
Well, you wouldn't want to actually spend from it. If you have a quantum computer, you can just mint infinite coins regardless. That wouldn't be the immediate target.
Yeah.
The main focus is that if you have a one-time key, as in the private key, not as in the public key we see on chain, you can calculate the key image for that one-time key. And if you calculate its key image, you can detect when it was spent. So as part of this full chain membership proofs proposal, I was looking at it and I noted it inherently, like just the proposal I made without my intention for this, inherently noted malleability. And when I was doing my review with the proposal, I noticed allowed malleability of the output key. Now, instead of the output key being the variable X times the constant G, technically, you could have it be the variable x times the constant g plus, let's say, a variable a times the constant z. The letters for these don't matter. And I was reviewing that malleability because obviously when you suggest malleability, that's just a concern. You know, if someone can manage to get two different key images for a single output, they could double spend, and that's a concern. So I was trying my best to review the impacts of this malleability. And what I realized is that it, as far as I can tell, it's still perfectly secure. And because it changes how output keys work, it changes the effects of a quantum computer. A quantum computer can recover for a output key X times the constant G. They can recover X. But if the output key is X times the constant G plus A times the constant Z, they cannot recover X and A. They can only recover whatever the X would be if it was of the form X times G. But it cannot recover each of the independent...
Right?
Huh?
Sufficiently enough for the signature, but you would not get the private key. You would be able to...
Actually, if you created that signature, it would be a signature for technically a different output. Because right now the output key is defined as X times the constant G, and that X is what decides your key image. But this quantum computer, when it looked at an output key of the form X times the constant G plus A times the constant C, it would actually recover a different X value. And because it recovered a different X value, it would actually create a different key image. So it would actually have a different private key, and it would have a different key image. And that's why a quantum computer would be they would be unable to detect what the actual key image for that output was, because it would effectively create a new key image with its ability to solve for the elliptic curve discrete log problem. So it's not that this scheme isn't theoretically Ford secret. It's that the exact full chain membership proof proposal I'm making, the proof that I use to sign for it and to prove ownership and prove the linking tag is correct, the key image, that proof is not Ford secret. So the scheme theoretically could be made Ford secret, but one of these proofs would have to be augmented.
I had a question, man, that has come up a lot on this show. And hopefully you listened to enough Monero talks to notice how there's a great interest in, because the hash rate for Monero is what it is, and it has, I don't know if you've looked at it recently, but it's not super great. There's been a lot of interest in the effect that merge mining, especially with other practical use case chains, what effect that would have on Monero, both the tokenomics of other people mining it, but then also what effect it might have on price, what effect it might have on performance, and so on. And as many people chiming in is the same as how many different opinions there are on this. But isn't it DarkFi? Who was it that's going to be merge mining with Monero already as a project?
Tari, right?
My main question is, what do you think about not only the implications of what Tari already plans to do, but what do you think the greater implications for merge mining just generally would be for Monero? And then how much could you scale such a concept for the value of merge mining for both the project and Monero itself?
I wasn't commenting. This isn't something I have an opinion on.
Got it. So there's another...
Can it be more helpful there?
All right, Luke, thank you so much, man. Greatly appreciate you sticking with us today, answering everybody's questions.
Thanks for the opportunity. I was happy to.
We're super excited. I mean, there's no bigger news in Monero right now, and I can't remember the last time. I was so excited about Monero in terms of its technological improvements. So cheers, man.
Thank you. We all greatly appreciate it.
All
right. Have a great one, y'all. Bye.
Thank you for joining us on this week's episode. We release new episodes every week. You can find and subscribe to our show on YouTube, Odyssey, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Go to MoneroTalk.live to subscribe for a full list of places where you can watch and listen. If you want to interact with us, guests, or other podcast listeners, you can follow us on Twitter. And please leave us a review on iTunes. It helps people find the show, and we are always happy to read them. So thanks so much, and we look forward to being back next week.